The morning here is overcast, which in Naroda in late August feels like a small mercy. I woke up to the sound of water, not the spring itself, but the Karai's channels that run beneath the old town, carrying snowmelt from the Naroda Mountains down to the gardens. It's day 6 of my 9 days here, and I've started to notice the way this town breathes around its water. The Chashma Spring is the heart, but the Karai's are the veins. I walked over to the Chashma complex before the heat had a chance to settle. The spring pool is a steady 19.5 degrees, and the sacred Marinka fish, fat, ancient-looking things, circle in the clear water like they own the place. A few pilgrims were already there, filling plastic bottles with the mineral water. There's something about this spot that makes you understand why people have been coming here for over 1,000 years. The 10th century historian Narshaki mentioned it as a pilgrimage site even then. I sat on the edge of the pool for a while, just watching. The Juma Mosque with its 40 columns and the 16-meter dome loomed beside me, and the Nurotie Mausoleum was just behind that. The whole complex is the reason most people come to Naroda. But I've been here long enough now to see the layers, the Alexander Fortress up on the hill, the Soviet-era additions, the new tourism push. It's all stacked on top of each other like the town itself. A man came over and started talking to me, the kind of unhurried conversation that happens when you sit still long enough. He told me about the Kavrak poachers. Apparently, illegal harvesters have been caught cutting and collecting sap from the wild ferula plants in the Naroda district, causing over 3 billion soms of ecological damage. I'd heard about this a few days ago, but hearing it from a local made it feel more immediate. These plants are part of a desert ecosystem, and someone's stripping them for profit. We talked a bit more, and he pointed out the spots in the old town, the 500 by 500 meter walled core around the fortress, where the Karai's channels surface. I'd been down in them yesterday, walking the underground tunnels, but seeing them from above, as part of the daily life, is different. Kids were splashing in a shallow channel, and a woman was washing vegetables in another. The water is life here, and it has been for centuries. I paid my respects at the Namazgo Mosque on the way back. It's a 16th century structure on a 10th century base, and the roof of 25 domes is something to see. It was used as a granary in Soviet times, which strikes me as the kind of practical reuse that this town does so well. There's no pretension here, just function and endurance. For lunch, I wandered over to Avon, a restaurant I'd been to a few days ago. I ordered a bowl of plov, about 30,000 som, which is around $2.50, and a samsa to start. The plov was rich with carrots and lamb, and I ate it slowly, watching the street outside. The town was quiet, like it always is in the midday heat. A few men were drinking tea at the table next to me, and the fan above the door turned lazily. After lunch, I climbed up to the Nur Fortress, the ruins of Alexander the Great's border post from 327 BC. It's not much to look at now, just crumbling walls and a steep hill, but standing there, you can see why he picked this spot. The desert stretches out to the north, and the mountains rise behind you. It's a frontier, and it's been a frontier for over 2,000 years. The view from the top is something. To the south, the Naroda Ridge, and beyond that, the Kizilkum Desert. I could just make out the glint of Adarkal in the distance. The lake is only about 40 kilometers away, but on a clear day like this, it feels like you could reach out and touch it. I thought about the yurt camps out there, and the camels, and the birds that have started migrating through for September. I came down from the fortress and stopped at the donuts and coffee shop for a cold drink. A coffee here is about 15,000 som, a little over a dollar, and it's a small luxury I've grown used to. The woman behind the counter recognized me and asked how my trip was going. I told her about the plan to head south to Samarkand, Bokhara, and Khiva for the autumn, and she nodded like she'd heard it 100 times before. Everyone here knows that the tourists save the big cities for later. In the afternoon, I went back to the Chashma complex to swim in the spring pool. It's the kind of thing that sounds odd to a visitor, swimming in a sacred spring, but it's been done here for centuries, and the water is so clear you can see the pebbles on the bottom. The fish swirl around your legs, and the temperature is perfect after the heat of the day. I floated there for a while, looking up at the dome of the mosque, and I felt something I've been chasing since I started this journey. A sense of being exactly where I'm supposed to be. I got out and dried off in the sun, then sat by the pool to read for a bit. A family was having a picnic under the mulberry trees, and an old man was meticulously cleaning the area around the spring. The pilgrim trade is the town's lifeblood, and it shows in the care people take with this place. For dinner, I walked to Minarai Kalan Restaurant and Terrace, one of those places that looks nothing special from the outside but has a rooftop terrace that catches the last of the light. I ordered a skewer of shashlik and a plate of fresh naan, about 20,000 som altogether, maybe $1.60. The mutton was smoky and tender, and I ate it with my hands, watching the swallows dart over the rooftops. As the sun went down, the town seemed to exhale. The heat eased, and people came out of their houses to sit on benches and talk. I walked back through the old town, past the Chashma complex again, and the spring was glowing in the dim light, or maybe that was just the reflection of the lights on the water. I stopped for a moment and listened to the sound of the karais running somewhere below. Tomorrow I'm planning to drive out to Hayat village, up in the Narado Mountains, to look for Severtsov's wild sheep, the argali that this biosphere reserve is meant to protect. And before that, I want to check out the Sarmishsay Gorge about 40 kilometers away, where there are over 4,000 petroglyphs on the Karatau slopes. It's a lot to fit in, but that's the rhythm of this place, moving between water and rock, history and the present. A few practical notes. If you're coming to Naroda, you'll probably fly into Navoi and drive the 70 kilometers out. There's talk of expanding Navoi International Airport into a regional logistics hub with new cargo flights to Delhi. I've heard it could mean more connections in the coming years, but for now it's still a small airport. The drive from Navoi is easy, just a straight road through the desert. For staying here, you've got choices. There are budget homestays like Asrur's or Kamal's at around 400,000 som a night, maybe $30. If you want something a bit more comfortable, Riad Nur and tours in the center is about 570,000 som, or $45. And if you want the full desert experience, the yurt camps on Adarkal, like Kizilkum Knights Camp, will set you back about 1 million som, which is around $80. Most visitors are here for the lake and the yurts, but the town itself has a lot to offer if you give it a few days. One thing to remember, register your place of stay within 3 days of arriving. Your hotel or guest house will do it automatically and give you a slip. Keep it until you leave. It's an easy thing to overlook, but it matters at the border. I headed back to my room as the muezzin's call drifted over the town. The night was cool, and the stars were starting to come out. Naroda isn't on many itineraries, and that's part of its charm. I've been here 6 days, and I'm only just beginning to understand how this town works. Its water, its history, its quiet endurance, and I've still got 3 more days. Everything I've talked about, the homestays, the yurt camps, the hikes, is in the episode notes, along with where to sort out your registration and any other practical bits. Tomorrow, it's off to the mountains. I'll tell you how it goes.